Well, thank you everyone for joining us. This is Dr. Will Pelt, and today is June 15th, 2017, and this is the World Peace Diet Circle call that we have on the third Thursday of every month. Typically, we had it on the second Thursday of May because I was in China giving a lecture series there for a couple of weeks. I would like to talk a little bit about today and share some thoughts and insights from that time there. And I'd like to just welcome everybody. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here. And thanks for your commitment to our cause of veganism for the benefit of all living beings, and which means all human beings and all other animals, all the other beautiful beings that share this earth with us, and the being that is ourself also, our own quality of consciousness is so important in this movement. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit more as well, hopefully today. We also plan on having Madeline join us a little later in the call. And of course, this is an opportunity for any of you who would like to share an insight or share a question or make a comment or talk about any issues or insights that have emerged for you at any point. You know, this is a great chance. We have a safe space. Just press *6, I believe is what it is, *6 on your phone, and you'll be able to reveal yourself to me here on the overview that I have, and so I can unmute your phone. So I could just go ahead and jump in. Let's take a minute, as we usually do, at the very beginning of our time together, and pause. This is such a precious time. Once a month we get together in consciousness and verbally, and I think also non-verbally, to support each other in what is really, in many ways, a very pioneering work, a very challenging, in times excruciating work of being messengers of respect and kindness for non-human animals in a society that just uses them without even thinking about it and abuses them in hideous ways by the millions every day and by the billions every day, actually. So I really appreciate your being with us and know that your presence is important. We are all supporting each other on this call. And so for that reason, I especially encourage you, if you had any thoughts or questions, to feel free to share them, either directly, or you can always send me an email if you want me to mention something or address something without actually speaking yourself. That's also fine. We do have one or two of those for this call, too, from people that have come in. So, but as I was saying, let's take a minute or two and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have this evening, and know that we are part of a movement that is expanding, that is deepening, that is growing, and that is helping humanity to awaken out of centuries of delusion, of violence and abuse of other living beings, and to plant seeds of compassion and freedom and joy and abundance for ourselves and for all living beings. And we give thanks knowing that each and every one of us who are on the call, every day we are growing in our understanding, we're deepening in our awareness and in our skillfulness to share these ideas and the deeper spirit of compassion and respect for all life in our gestures, in our words, in our thoughts, in our feelings, in our actions and behaviors, in every dimension of our lives as we go about our lives with the purpose of blessing and healing our world and being part of this movement that goes back really thousands of years and that has become, I think, obviously essential for our continued existence on this earth. So we also give thanks for all the other human beings and all beings who are all working together to help bring about a positive transformation in our ways of dealing with each other and with all living beings. And we give thanks for the efforts of all beings of the past, of the present, of the future, that were part of this ongoing effort, and it gives our lives richness and depth and meaning, even though certainly a lot of heartache as well, I'm sure. And we give thanks also, knowing that our time together here is sacred and blessed, and that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together here on this call will be ripples that will help to awaken the consciousness of others and help people to question the abuse of animals and to bring our lives into alignment with our values as a society at a deeper level. So we give thanks knowing that in spite of the enormous resistance, the ingrained inertia of delusion and violence, that there is every day new sparkles and new openings and new awareness that can bless us, that can inspire us, that can help us to awaken, that we can share with others thoughts and feelings. Sometimes Madeline and I call them angel ideas that can come to us and almost coming from another dimension of understanding that we can share. So thank you all so much again for joining us. It's a delight to have this once a month opportunity to connect in this way. And as I was saying, feel free at any moment or at any time to press *6 if you'd like to share something or ask a question. And this is really your time. This is not my time. I mean, I love talking about veganism and the challenges and opportunities that are facing us today. But it's really our time. It's your time. It's our time. And so if there's anything to tailor a focus, that's always exciting, and I'm happy to go along with that and as best I can. So, but I did promise that I would talk about the time that I spent in China in May. I basically flew there, as you probably perhaps remember, back on May 17th. We had our World Peace Diet Circle on the 11th, and I arrived on the 18th. So you're going across the international dateline. So I arrived. I flew on the evening of the 17th and arrived on the evening of the 18th in Shanghai. And all I can say, you know, one thing that I'll just say at the beginning, because I think I just need to sort of say it, that this time I was in China, which was just about 2 weeks, I came back on the 29th, and from the 17th to 29th. So it was... It's like for me as a human being, as a person with a personality and history and whatever. It's quite surreal because when I go to China, the last time I went it was similar, and this time it seemed the same or even more so actually. I'm not the same person as I am here in the eyes of people there, and basically I'm a celebrity, I guess you'd say. I don't really, just to put it in a general term, and I don't ever feel like a celebrity here. I'm an author, and you know, Mel and I travel quite a bit and speak, and we do I do concerts, and Ellen joins in, and we are, you know, we're pretty public. But a lot of, you know, we're, our lives are relatively ordinary, I guess, in a certain sense. Also, you know, we have our lives. We drive, we go to the store, and have phone calls and this and that. And so, when I go to China, though, it's, as soon as I go through customs and get off the plane, the people there are so giving and so excited about promoting veganism. And it's really nothing about me, but it's really about them. I mean, they're so extremely generous and enthusiastic and committed to the vegan message. And they see me as, what did they say? Well, we had a discussion about, I think, the first or second day as sort of a beacon, I guess, or something. And so they really shower me with attention and flowers and everything is done for me. You know, it's I can't really do anything on my own. I think they want to carry my bags. They want me to eat. I never have to worry about food. I'm taken everywhere. There's always people with me. There's sometimes famous people with me that are, you know, kind of well-known Chinese that are vegans. There was two movie stars, actually, that are movie television stars, two men who I guess are very, you know, I could tell they were very well-known and respected actors, but they've gone vegan and they were very helpful, actually, in turning around also. And so the movement there really is remarkable. I just love to see how the people work together, how they're so abundant and giving in the way they do things. You know, we have very large turnouts for things, for the events, and lots of media attention, interviews with media, sometimes very large. You know, sometimes I'm you know, talking to millions of people in China. You know, when I'm doing an interview, and so it's like a complete shift of my consciousness. It's, I have to pinch myself sometimes. I think, this is really true. You know, if I walk into a room, there's a line of people on my left and on my right, and they're all bowing and applauding. And, you know, if I'm just walking through a hallway somewhere or something, so it's that kind of a thing. And but I'm really busy doing lots of events, and that's how I like it. I mean, they're always apologizing and saying they're so sorry that, you know, they know I'm getting up in years. You know, they have this thing that I'm, you know, here I am, like 60, almost 64 years old, and, you know, I mean, they shouldn't push me so hard. There's quite a bit of argument among the Chinese people over that. You know, some were saying, no, you're pushing him too hard. And other people say, well, he says he likes to do it. And so I do, actually. I mean, if I'm going to be there, I don't want to just sit around, you know. So every day, basically, you know, I'm booked somewhere else, so there's a lot of traveling by plane and train to get to the next event. And we did, you know, at least one event every day. Sometimes we did two or three events in different cities every day. And the events overall were very well done. You know, they know I like a piano, actually, and so they rent one. You know, they just bring it in. There's a grand piano on the stage, and as soon as I'm done, the men come and take it away. And, you know, they just seem to just make things happen. You know, they have large banners and just a very a lot of showmanship, I guess is kind of how it is. Lots of really very, very lots of showmanship. And some of the insights, though, and things that emerge for me about maybe things we can learn, too, the Buddhist community there helped quite a bit on this one, and they covered my airplane flight, and you know, so they helped financially, given actually a donation to help out. And there's a large Buddhist temple, and they've offered to do that again in November when Madeline and I will go together in November after we go to India and Taiwan. And so they're already making plans. So, but there's the Buddhist community, and they are basically vegan, and they have been for over 1,000 years in China, probably 1,500 years, I would say. And so they're very supportive. I mean, I don't know if every temple is, but there's definitely some temples that are supportive. And I gave a lecture the very first day, and I arrived in Shanghai that night. So the next day, on the Friday, the 19th, I gave a speech in the afternoon to a huge crowd of people at a Buddhist monastery in Shanghai. And it was great. You know, I mean, they had a really excellent translator, and I spoke, and then the Buddhist master there also spoke. And then Dr. Yu Li, his name is Yu Li. His family name is always given first, so his family name is Yu, his first name is Li. And he's a PhD. He organizes the tour pretty much completely. He also owns a restaurant in Beijing called the Vegan Hut. And so he helps organize a lot. So he speaks on the health aspects of veganism. I speak on everything else. And then the Buddhist teacher spoke on. So it was a whole afternoon event on, that was on Friday. And we had lunch, and, you know, we had a whole feast. They have these amazing Buddhist feasts that are, of course, all vegan, with just the most delicious food, with all kinds of, I think I mentioned last time, all kinds of mushrooms, more types of mushrooms than I've ever imagined existed on Earth. I find it kind of, from tall, little, long, skinny ones that look just like grass, really, but they're mushrooms, to these huge, flat leaves that are also mushrooms, and really everything in between you could ever imagine. They're just like mushrooms upon mushrooms upon mushrooms. But anyway, so all kinds, steamed and scooped and fried and everything else. And we opened it up for Q&A, and so it was really good. And there was the Buddhist teacher was not so strong on veganism. He, you know, but he did talk about the importance of compassion, and you know, but he wasn't quite so articulate. As a vegan, I don't think most people over in China feel that veganism is something that you do because you're a Buddhist. You know, so I mean, vegetarian, they don't even have a word for vegan, so they call it vegetarian, or strict vegetarian is the word. It's a kind of a problem, the language of this whole thing. But I guess strict vegetarian means someone who's a vegetarian doesn't eat shallots, onions, leeks, or garlic, or those anything from that allium family, which is considered stimulating and not good for meditation for people who are monks. And so he actually talked quite a bit about that, how important it was for them not to eat those foods, which was interesting. I'd never heard anyone really kind of go into that in depth, but he did. And but we had lots of questions, and they had a grand piano, which is kind of bizarre, you know, in this Buddhist temple, they had this grand piano. So I played, and then they had a big television station that also did an interview and did a panel that apparently was going out to, they said, millions of people that entered, you know, in the whole country. And then I'll go through everything, but the next day was interesting, because there's a movement in China that I'm getting hooked up with, which is based on tea, and tea as a way of life, as a sort of meditative way of living, of contemplating, of being respectful of others, respectful of nature. And there's a Taiwanese Chinese man who's kind of the founder of this particular lineage of tea people, but they have emerged as being extremely enthusiastic supporters of my work there. And so they set up a concert for me on Saturday morning with a beautiful grand piano in a big hall. I mean, they had, you know, I don't know, several hundred people there for this concert. And then they're also quite musical. They're into creativity, so they sing. And they have some drums, sort of traditional Chinese drumming, which is quite dramatic, kind of like Japanese drumming. It's very rousing. And the concert, you know, the concert was much more, I was they wanted me to speak too, so I spoke, but not very long, maybe only 10 or 15 minutes, a short talk on vegan, values and essentials, but then mainly they wanted the music. They just loved the music. So, that's really been kind of neat, and they now are publishing a lot of my CDs in China. They're kind of working on that, and so the music is really going very well there. They're very interested in the energy of the music, and it's kind of neat because they listen very deeply and seem to have an enormous respect for the piano compositions that I play. They're pretty improvisational and contain the yearning for peace and for compassion for animals and for healing of the earth, and they just love that, which is actually quite delightful for me too. So we did that, and then we went to Shenzhen, which is a big city. Some of you haven't maybe heard of it. I hadn't really heard of it, but it's a huge city that of 8 or 9 million people that is very new. It's a young city. And so I did a whole event there with a lecture and concert and Q&A and session. And Dr. Yu was there too. And then the next day, I had a, if I can remember, perhaps I don't remember all the things that happened, but there was, the opportunity on Monday to go to a school and speak to these little children. And this was something really so different for me because I don't normally go to school. I mean, sometimes I go to colleges quite a bit and sometimes to high schools, but to go to speak to 8-year-olds, this is like third graders. I'm just looking at my schedule here to see what I did. So in Guangzhou, this is all in Guangzhou. Guangzhou is the Buddhist monastery. And sorry about that. Yeah, Shanghai was a welcoming. Oh, actually, Shanghai was interesting because I gave a lecture there. And then and this was put on by a very well-known family, I guess, in Shanghai or in China. That has deep roots in Chinese culture, and the man, husband and wife team, but the husband named Michael, he is apparently on the board of directors of TED International, and he said he really wants me to do a presentation for TED. So I guess we'll see if that unfolds, but. And that was quite interesting to talk to him. He's one of these people that just flies all over the world, very involved in new consciousness things. There's so much happening at these higher levels, it seems like, among people that is positive. And so it was really cool to meet him and his wife. And they have several NGOs that they run that are based on healing, environmental healing, animal liberation, and so forth. And he works, as I said, with TED also. Yeah, and then we went down to Guangzhou, which is in the southern part of China. We flew there that night, actually. And so Saturday I was at the that temple in, now that's Canton. You know, you see Cantonese cuisine, that's Guangzhou, it's Canton. And then it was so interesting because then the next, it was later in the day on Saturday, in the evening. I was on a panel at the Buddhist temple with a fellow from Poland who's a breatharian. or who had been a breast surgeon. And that was really interesting. So he and I had a chance to talk quite a bit about, I gave a lecture first on veganism. And then he joined me on the stage and gave us a short summary of his experience. And he lives in China now and speaks very good English. And he's learning Chinese. He's married to a Taiwanese woman, I guess. But he ate no food and drank no water for about 2 years, he said, back about 5 or 6 years ago. And he said, so his whole point was that we should really question everything that we're taught, which, of course, I agree with myself. And I think the human being has enormous capacities that we probably don't really utilize. And he was saying that all the nutrients that we need, we can get from breathing, that essentially that the air has nitrogen, has oxygen, has carbon dioxide, and so energy basically comes from carbohydrates, and our body can synthesize carbohydrates from carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen that are in the air, and there's also enough of nitrogen for protein. So we can get all the nutrients we need, and even other things, you said, essential, whatever, minerals and things we can get from the air. And so, but he eats again. We had lunch afterwards, I remember, or dinner, I guess it was. And so he sat there and ate the rice and vegetables and everything else that I was eating. But so he's eating now. But he gives workshops, and he's his whole message. I really liked it. It was basically that the only way we're going to be healthy as individuals and as a society is to connect deeply with nature, to really connect with nature, to get outside, to breathe, to get sunshine, to not eat anything that's processed, eat pure foods as much as possible, think pure thoughts, and that it is possible to not need to eat or drink. But he really does not emphasize that teaching very much. He just kind of passed by on that. He said he had that experience, but his main teaching is not to try to get people to go breatharian or anything like that. It's much more just to live a life that's more connected with nature. And he didn't seem to be, he didn't talk at all about compassion for animals. That was my thing. But my feeling is that is important to him too. His main thing is about being healthy and respecting nature. And so it was very interesting. It was very interesting to meet him, actually, and have a chance to dialogue publicly. And then we did Q&A together. And, he was very critical of science as it's practiced. And Dr. Yu was also part of the panel. So they got into a bit of a debate because Dr. Yu was saying, well, science is important. Science is how we know what we know. And, of course, he was saying, well, and in a lot of ways, it's co-opted by corporations. It's not really true what they think. But anyway, that's an ongoing debate on many levels. But then we went to Shenzhen and did a lecture there, a concert. It was an artistic event. And that was on Sunday. And then on Monday morning, that was when I went to a school with little kids. And this was such a cool thing because my old friend, this is a person who was really a pretty good friend of mine 30 years ago. His name is Eugene Sui, and he's Chinese-American. He was born in Minneapolis, born and raised in this country, but his parents are Chinese and don't speak very good English, so he's really Chinese. But born and raised in this country, so he speaks both languages. And we got our PhD at Berkeley together in the education department in 1987, 88, in those years. And then we really didn't see each other after we went our separate ways, but I knew he's an architect and also an educator, and he's extremely visionary. He's really out there and hates architecture as it's practiced because he says, we create these forms that enslaves people, these boxes. They're environmentally devastating. They're devastating to our consciousness. So he creates these spaces that are extremely different. I mean, they're so round and natural and futuristic that he has a very hard time ever getting anything past the planning board, any plans ever approved. It's very difficult for him. But he is really doing well in China. He works about half the time in Berkeley, an office in Berkeley in Emeryville, and half the time. So we just, after 30 years, we've connected up again through some, it's a long story, but anyway. And he read the word, he just recently read the World Peace Diet. I sent him, you know, we started talking about it, and he's gone vegan, and he's on fire. I mean, he's really on fire about the importance of veganism. And really very upset about what we're doing to animals. And he said, I knew, but I didn't really know. He's really a remarkable person. He's a champion gymnast, champion boxer, a runner, a very, very athletic, a pianist, a dancer, and a flamenco guitarist, saxophone player. I mean, he does so many different things and has mentored hundreds of architecture students over the years in the studio. But anyway, so his wife, Elizabeth, is a school principal there, and so they're both trying to bring the vegan message to the school. And she's the, like I say, she's the principal of the school or something like that, or vice principal maybe it is. And so we went to the school, and they packed this room with these 8-year-old kids, and there was probably 150 or 200 kids in that room, and they were so beautiful. I was just amazed at how beautiful these children were. I mean, I just loved them, and they were so bright and attentive, and they sat there for like an hour and a half or whatever it was. When Dr. Lee gave a lecture, you know, a PowerPoint, talked all about the nutritional benefits of the plant-based diet, and they sat there and they listened, and then they asked questions, and he answered them, and then I came on and talked to, you know, and I had to have an interpreter, and they, you know, had to listen to the interpreter, and not to me. They didn't know what I was saying, I don't think, because I, you know, spoke English. But they asked really good questions. I mean, I had a great dialogue with these kids. They were totally open. They seemed to really love the idea and really ask good questions. And then it was just amazing to see these kids sit there for 2 hours and just they're so disciplined but happy and active. They were active, but they were able to maintain a focus. Really quite remarkable. Not what I typically see in this country for children. And then afterwards we went to lunch, and it was a totally vegan meal, you know, with the principal there. And the principal, this guy, he said he's going vegan because he said he has to be an example. Because we were really talking, you know, and also this movie star guy showed up. Dr. Yu was able to get him to come, and these kids were in awe because he's on TV shows. And he's a beautiful guy, this movie star. And he was talking about how when he ate meat, he was a tough guy, and once he became a vegetarian, they never say vegan, really, they say vegetarian, but it's basically the same as vegan. And when he became a vegetarian, his whole demeanor got softer. He became more relaxed and more tender, and he said, now I might cry when I hear beautiful music, and so I had played, and he said, I cry when I hear Dr. Tuttle play the piano. I mean, he was really just talking about how wonderful it is to be soft as a man and to feel your feelings and to have compassion for animals and to be kind and loving to animals and to other people. And these kids were just eating it up. You know, they were just really, you know, loving to hear it. You know, it was so touching to see this kind of thing happening and to see the administration. And the thing that was amazing also is that my whole presentation, while I was talking to these kids, They were live streaming it throughout the entire country of China to a lot of other school, third and second and third grade classes, so that people could hear, in other cities and provinces could hear it as well. And they also recorded it to be played later. So, you know, I don't know how many kids are going to see this, but, the parents, can also tune in. They have a setup. Everything in China is very organized around these things, and they have this thing called WeChat, where it's kind of like our Facebook, but it's a little more. It links people up a little better, and so they put it on WeChat, and people could just watch it there. And so, so that's the thing. You know, I even though I was aware I was speaking maybe to 100 or 200 or 300 people, but they actually have it going out to thousands or, I don't know how many people, maybe even a lot more. And so that was the school, and that was just a very heartful and inspiring time there at that school. And then we went back to Guangzhou. And then tea people put on a concert, which was huge, and it was sold out. You know, they rented a 500 seat auditorium, and it was standing room only, and the tickets were like $50 per person. You know, this never happens in this country. I mean, I just, you know, it's just the whole, it's like I say, it's like entering this alternate reality. And anyway, so I played, I played a concert and did a similar kind of thing with speaking about the benefits of veganism. They also had a few other people doing some songs and things. It was really nice, but I was, you know, the featured performer for that. And so that was on Monday. And then on Tuesday, we went to Zhongshan, the city of Zhongshan. And that's just a little south of Guangzhou, toward the ocean. Beautiful, old, ancient city, famous for their temples. And did a lecture, two lectures there. And I don't know what to say. I mean, it was amazing. At one point, we went to the airport from Zhongshan to fly to Ningbo, which was where we were on Thursday. We were there in Zhongshan on Tuesday and Wednesday doing lectures and Q&A and media interviews and things. And they took me in a Rolls Royce. I mean, can you believe it, a Rolls Royce? You know, it was like a million. She said it cost, a lady said it cost I can't believe it. She said it cost 8 million yuan, which is like $1 million. Anyway, you know, there I was riding along in this Rolls Royce. I mean, this driver, you know, and going to the airport. It was about a 45-minute drive, I guess. And amazing, God, what a car! It's like you see the interior of these. It's like a, I don't know what. It's not like anything I've ever seen before. But anyway, you know, on one level, I completely think it's ridiculous to spend a lot of money on something like that. But this woman, she started a restaurant called Veggie House, I think it is. Susie. Her name is Susie. her English name. A lot of Chinese people give themselves an English name. Susie's Veggie House. And I guess she's doing really well because she really just, you know, she rented the hall and she put on the events and she paid for this Rolls Royce. And then, you know, coming over from the airport, it was a Mercedes. You know, it was like she just wanted to really, gave me flowers up and down. And it was like so, you know, I feel like, gosh, come on, you know, but they just seemed to love to do it. And she just, you know, she just wanted to do it. Everywhere we go, you know, I'm getting so many bouquets of flowers. I sometimes I'm walking around with two or three bouquets of flowers in my arms. I have to give them to people. We landed in Ningbo. I won't take too much more time. I'll just kind of finish it up here. It's going on a little bit long. But Ningbo is a famous city. It was the Maritime Silk Road, beginning of the Maritime Silk Road. So they talk a lot about that. They have a lot of famous Buddhist temples there. So I spoke at a Buddhist temple there, and That went very well. Then we took the train to Fuan, which is going south, gave a lecture there. Then we went down to Quanzhou, which is was a beautiful city, very, very inspiring lecture there. It's very well presented. Lots of people came. And then we went finally for the lab. That was on Saturday. And then we went, and that's a famous, that city is famous for West Lake, which is, tourists come from all over, I guess, to go there. Then we went to Hangzhou for the final events. And we flew there, and that's up by Shanghai, and then we flew out of Shanghai. And so again, all these events went very well. We had really good turnouts and media coverage and extremely responsive people. One in Hangzhou, oh gosh, there were some things I wanted to share. In Quanzhou, where I spoke there was at a community, like we live in an HOA, it was kind of like that. It was a community that was like a planned community, but it was built on kindness and respect for nature. And it was one of these remarkable places. I wish I could do a whole video, audio lecture on this place. I have quite a few photographs, but they trust people. I mean, that was the thing. Like, they have community gardens where people can grow their own food. And then they have this community store where people, sell their produce and all kinds of food. I mean, it's produce, it's rice, it's all plant-based. But, it's all done on an honor system. Everything's on an honor system. So they have they have a box where you put your money, but they have change. I mean, they have this whole bunch of, change of different bills and things. So you just take what change you need and put it in the thing. And they had a restaurant there that serves all you can eat, totally vegan, for 10 yuan, which is like, $1.80 or something. And really good, vegetables and rice and everything. We did a whole panel on how we can live in harmony with nature, how we can create communities in harmony with nature. And they had a big crowd that came. It was televised. And they have a lake and a mountain. And people are... it's like a planned community. It's mostly Chinese people. There are a few, I think, Europeans, but it's mainly Chinese people. And so it was very interesting, anyway, just to be there and to see this place. They had another vegan restaurant that was more high-end. We ate there also. So anyway, that was at Quanzhou. And then Hangzhou was at the very end, and we they gave me this book that was created by one of the local governmental agencies. I wish you could have this kind of thing here. They have a governmental agency that put together this whole book on with vegan recipes and all the benefits of vegan eating, and really, they're really encouraging it. It's a local government it's all in Chinese, but it had such great pictures, and I brought one home. So again, that was very inspiring. So the government is really behind veganism, as I said last time. They want more people to go vegan, although the dairy industry is also pretty strong in China, so they don't like you to criticize dairy too directly, although I did a lot. But Dr. Yu doesn't criticize it too directly. He just says it's best to eat a whole foods plant-based diet, and he kind of focuses on that. But that's my report, I would say, basically. It was great to get back, and it was so weird, and then I left, and now I'm back here, like, just a total non-celebrity. but it's remarkable to see how the secret life or something over there. It's really funny. But they're beautiful people, and Madeline and I are looking forward. We have, lecture tour coming up in the fall, when we go to Europe and then to India and then again to Taiwan and again to China and then again to Hawaii. So I think, you know, as long as there's people who are really open and encouraging the message, and it was great. I mean, sometimes I was just literally signing books, maybe 100 or 200 books, and people are reading the books, they're going vegan. I heard so many people say they've gone vegan now, and they're opening restaurants, they're doing groups, they're, you know, really making, they're not just talking about it, they're really doing something. And I think that's the beautiful, that's why I think it's so important, even though, you know, it's not convenient to be flying and to, I have to usually recover a little bit after one of these trips. But I feel that it's planting some great seeds. It's not really so much me, but the people, you know, they're able to just use this to just catapult the movement forward. And I think China is so important. You know, it's 1.4 billion people. You know, it's huge, and it's really the birthplace of veganism. It's coming back there again. So that's my report, and maybe I won't go on anymore about it. If you have any questions or concerns or anything at all, I'm happy to talk, discuss them with you. And Madeline has come into the room and joined us. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute Madeline's phone. And if you have a question for Madeline, you can ask her too. She's the real power here. Let's see, I think this is you. Is that you? Yeah.
Yes. Hello, everybody. I wasn't on the call for so long, I feel like. And I'm happy to be here, and I hope all of you are doing very well. We deserve it as vegans, and taking care of the animals is such a noble action. So what I like to talk a little bit is about our wonderful fruit forest, our gardens, and how beautiful things are coming along. And there are snow peas and berries and mulberries, wonderful mulberries, and the tomatoes, they're still green, but I saw a little hint of colors, and then some kale, and we had even a few cherries already after 4 years. It takes a while till the fruit trees bear fruit, but we have a few apples, we have plenty of peaches coming along, and apricots this year, and one pear is coming, a little baby pear is hanging on one of the pear trees, and some walnuts on the Waldo, is his name, Waldo tree. And yeah, so it's really beautiful, and I just encourage you to have a few plants around you. It's so good for the soul, it's good for the psyche, it's just nice in between all the computer work or other kind of more heady work to look after a few plants. And if one doesn't have a garden, that is not an issue. One can have on the a window shelf, one can have a pot, or on the balcony, on the deck, or if one has a little front yard, one can make a tiny little raised bed or something, or one tree or something. It's really so beautiful, and I think that's how a revolution starts, to as vegans, to actually dive into a little bit of gardening. It's really fun, it's beautiful, it's rewarding. It's wonderful, and you can watch some videos. I don't have a new off the gardening, but it will come, but it's an older one where the food forest is still much smaller. But we have new intuitive kitchen videos, some really exciting recipes, and very soon there will come up a herbal green smoothie for breakfast. And we will be done maybe in a week or two, something like that, or three the most. And we realized that even above kale are the herbs. And you can still put your favorite kale in as a green smoothie, but herbs are really so potent. Each herb has a different shape, a different aroma, and that's not for nothing. I mean, some people of you probably also use some essences, like from lavender, oregano, or peppermint. So just imagine having this in your morning smoothie, what difference this makes for the day. One can only try it out and see how amazing herbal green smoothie with fruit, seasonal fruits is. So this will come soon, but there are plenty of other ones you can watch. And so, yeah, does anybody have a question to me? So just ask if you have something. We're having a good time. We're going soon on a miniature tour after having been 17 years on the road. A week is like a tiny, tiny little hint of tour. But it will be so great because it will be packed off events. And it's just going up north, direction Portland and then back. And I feel like we can't leave the food forest on its own. Even it has a watering system, but the fruits will come and all that. So we'll do a longer tour in the winter when the food forest is sleeping. Yeah, so if nobody has a question, then I like to shortly pass it on to Will, and I'd like to remind you also to be eco. Eco means like having everything organic, what's for cleaning, for wearing, for body care, and all these things are, because this all ends up in the water. And also having herbal remedies if you ever need some as vegans. So just remember that. No slavery support. Fair trade. Wow, that's a life. It's great. Thank you so much. And talk to you next time or another time. Bye-bye.
Great. All right. Thanks, Madeline. Wow. Yeah, that's really for us a big dimension of our life is growing our own food more and more. And I can really feel into the connection with the earth and with nature and with animals that helps to bring more sensitivity. It's still a young food forest. It's still only a few years old. The trees are still kind of young, but they are starting to bear fruit. Some of them, like the fig tree, give huge quantities. Some of them are just starting, as Madeline said, with one or two or a few fruits. But every year that goes by, they get bigger and more abundant. And there's this basic sense of seeing the healing power of food as something that connects us with nature and with the cycles of nature and the wisdom of plants. And we highly encourage everyone, as Madeline was saying, if you're able to grow sprouts or at least have some berries or some herbs, It says on the Resources for the World Peace Diet Circle for June, hopefully you've all had a chance to look at that, that Madeline has three new videos up this month on YouTube. One is Making Fresh Juice, and that's basically with a juicer making juice from carrots and beets, celery and ginger, I think it is. And then another one following up on that, which is a pulp omelet with tahini salad. So that's one of those things, you know, when you make juice on a juicer, the juice comes out one side and then the pulp comes out the other side, and that's basically just the cellulose that's left over. And most people throw that away. We never throw it away. We put it quite often into the compost for our garden, but we also use it sometimes. We make dishes. We make a meal out of it, you know, so that's what that is. That's making an omelet from the pulp and something that Madeline invented. So I think it's cool because so many people are into juicing, and it seems in a way kind of too bad to just throw away all that nice fiber. And so if you take that fiber from the carrot and celery and beet and ginger, the pulp, and then mix it with some fresh grain flour and make it into a very delicious meal. And so anyway, that's that one. And then mock mashed potatoes with vegetable medley. That's another one where she creates, you know, mock mashed potatoes. That's mashed potatoes that don't have any nightshades. So it's basically cauliflower and millet. It's really delicious. We love having that. We have it quite a bit. So yeah, check those out. And we just did one the other day. We haven't put it up yet on gathering herbs from the garden. And that'll be... And that'll go with the herbal green smoothie, because putting them into a blender, all these herbs, all kinds of peppermint and oregano and marjoram and all kinds of things. We have a lot of rosemary too here in California. But I think there's a lot to be said for that. So thanks, Madeline, for talking about that. And just to go over a couple of the questions that came up during the month that people were hoping I would address quickly here. I know it's already been an hour, but one little thing, I guess, just to mention is that one of our World Peace Diet facilitators, John, in Atlanta, has a World Peace Diet study group that meets regularly, and he said it's going really well, and people are, you know, reading the Wealthy Side together, and they have meals together, and people are going vegan because of this. And so it's great to hear that. And John's also working with a friend of ours, Chris and Craig Haley from Phoenix, who have created a training that I think pretty much it's open. It's an online training, and it's leading to an animal chaplain degree. So it's an animal chaplain program. It's through the Emerson Theological Institute, which is based in Southern California. And John is on the faculty now of the Emerson Theological Institute, which is it's affiliated with the religious science or science of mind movement, or it's called Centers for Spiritual Living now also. And it's similar to Unity and based in California, studied by Ernest Holmes. Yeah, they have this animal chaplaincy program. So John is involved with that, and not only doing the World Peace Diet training himself in Atlanta, but then also there's also this animal chaplaincy program, which is an online program for people who want to become ministers and get a degree, become licensed ministers, but they need to take courses for that. And so Craig and Chris Haley, who are friends of ours who are vegans in Phoenix, and we've worked together quite a bit in the past. And so John is working with them now, and they're including the World Peace Diet as part of their curriculum, the Animal Chaplaincy Program. And so John was just telling me that once a year in September, they have, even though it's an online program, they get together and in Phoenix and meet, you know, so the people who are to meet each other physically, who are going through the program together online. And so they have a conference gathering. And so he was saying that they would like to bring the World Peace Diet to that conference, and they would like to be able to donate books, like about 10 books to people who, so they could use them. And he was wondering if anybody might be able to donate. So I just said I'd mention it. So if any of you are interested in helping out, it costs me about $14 per book to with shipping and everything. So that would be $140. If anybody wants to make a donation to John and this program to help these people who are going through the animal chaplaincy program to have a copy of the World Peace Diet and to be able to study it together with John and Chris, he was saying that would be very much appreciated. So I said, all right, I'll just put it out there on this call and see if anyone of you who are listening would like to help John out and help the program out to donate 10 copies or whatever, 5 or whatever. Like I said, they're about $140 for 10, including shipping and everything. So that's that. And thank you, John, really so much for your persistence and creativity in bringing the World Peace Diet message to people online and through your study group in Atlanta and working with Craig and Chris and the Animal Chaplaincy Program. And I think the vegan spirituality movement is growing. People are seeing this connection, and it's really beautiful to see that happening. So thanks so much for that. And also, there was a question from our friends up in Victoria, who are World Peace Diet facilitators, Christine and John. They were wondering about, and if we could talk a little bit about the issues surrounding feeding of wildlife, basically. A lot of people do feed wildlife to help them. Some people do it for other reasons, like, you know, just to have that good feeling of a duck coming over and, you know, eating bread out of my hand or whatever. So, you know, it's a very complex subject. I've looked into it some, and actually Christine sent me a few very interesting articles. I maybe will include them with the notes for that I send out later today or tomorrow morning. But I think, you know, generally speaking, I've over the years, I've become pretty outspoken, I guess, against the feeding of wild animals or free-living animals, because for the most part, it harms them more than I think people realize, because usually whatever we give them is not something that they would eat. It's not natural for them, typically. And then it also changes their behavior. It can not only interfere with their digestion and their physical health, but it can also interfere with their sort of psychological and social health. It can throw off their way of relating to nature and to each other to have food, and it can spread disease. So there's the article she shared was quite interesting, talking about, for example, backyard bird feeders very often causing a lot of suffering to the animals, because they are breeding grounds for bacteria, parasites, and viruses and things, because it's a very unnatural for a bunch of birds to be all together and have all this food, and it's very often it's not cleaned very well, very often, and so birds transmit diseases back and forth. They very often get sick, and then very often the type of food they're getting is not really what they should be eating exactly. And then, of course, instead of getting it in nature, they're going to somebody's house. There's you know, instances of migration patterns just stopping because the birds aren't migrating because they're getting fed where they are. and all these things. So, so for the most part, you know, we think we're doing, we're helping. I mean, there are potentially, I guess, cases where animals, because of human interference, are really going hungry because we've ruined their habitat and they don't have any food left. And so then people think, well, now I should feed them, otherwise he'll die. And so you have to be careful about that, I just think, because, again, there's quite a bit of research showing that when we do feed them, typically the food we give them is not what they would be eating themselves, and it interferes severely with them, causing constipation or diarrhea or other problems that kill them faster than they would have died. And I've seen it a lot, just being, you know, traveling the world, in the United States specifically, in an RV for 20 years, and just seeing how the devastation. For example, if anyone ever feeds an alligator, that's a dead alligator. If feeds a bear, that's a dead bear. They will start coming too close to people and will hurt people or become a nuisance and have to be killed. And I've seen it a lot. Like where we live here, people were feeding the geese and the ducks that are on the lake. And I really complained to the lake committee, and I said, you've got to put some signs up and say, no feeding, you know. So they did. They put up signs and made it a fine to fine people if they do that. And I'm really glad because when you feed these animals, they're not eating what they should be eating. A lot of times it's horrible. It's just what, you know what it is. It's bread. And that can kill the animals. I mean, it'll really, you know, they'll eat more than they're supposed to, and then they'll either die or get very sick. And so generally, I think it's very tempting. It's fun to have animals close to us, and a good way to get them close to us is to give them some food, and you can become friends with them through food. But I think there's other ways to become friends with animals without feeding them, and we don't have to necessarily have that type of friendly relationship. I mean, we have a lot of deer around here, and we have a lot of other animals, you know, turkeys and foxes and so forth, but we don't feed them, and people do feed the deer here. I mean, they feed them, and it's, you know, it's against the law, but people do it because they love having the deer around, and it's an issue. Now, I know we live in California where usually the deer aren't starving, but they will go hungry. I mean, in the when it gets into September, October, it's really dry, they're hungry, they're skinny. But then their birth rates are lower, and that's actually, you know, better for the land, because they'll just have more babies if there's plenty of food. That's what they do, and that can be worse in the long run. So, the nature has built-in checks and balances that we, I think, should really honor. I don't know if any of you have read the Anastasia series of books, but we're rereading it now. And in the Anastasia series of books, it's just the opposite. It's so funny. It's just the exact opposite. The wild animals feed the humans. it's impossible for a human being to ever go hungry, you know, living in nature, according to these books, because squirrels and other animals will come running with nuts and seeds and things for us to eat, so we really don't have to worry. I mean, when we're living, that's of course only when we're living in really in harmony with them, and we're not abusing them. Or that's I think maybe the way it was a long time ago, or maybe the way it can be in the future when we're in harmony, when we're no longer abusing animals. I like the Anastasia books because there's quite a uplifting, positive vision of a future and a past, actually, where human beings and the animals lived in harmony without, you know, we never use them for food. And there's a feeling of respect and working together and celebrating the life here, you know, and humans, you know, fulfilling our purposes and not exploiting animals and not seeing ourselves as separate from nature and animals. That's really a deep wound in our society that I talk, you know, about in the World Peace Diet. I mean, when I wrote the World Peace Diet, I had never read the Anastasia books, but I think the basic idea pervades not only most spiritual traditions, but also our own, our own inner wisdom, that we are nature. We are manifestations of nature. And for us to be happy and healthy, we need to be connected to nature and honor and respect nature and take time every day to quiet our minds and to connect with our own true nature, which is eternal, in the nature of wisdom and joy and freedom and creativity, and to live our lives as creative expressions, and then to enjoy the creative process, or to enjoy the gardens that we make, the art, the music, the relationships, and so forth, and to really feel a sense of joy and gratitude in what we can create for the short time we're on this earth. It goes by quickly, so we're here in the garden blossoming, and to do it in a way that brings peace and healing and celebration to ourselves and to others. And I think animals are great teachers for that. I love watching birds flying and to see how animals have a natural sense of fulfilling their purpose on this earth and treasuring their lives. And I think we humans can take that to an even higher level with our capacities. So so that's what I want to say about feeding animals. Pretty much don't do it unless you have a special intuition that this, in this particular case, it's a good idea. It's so hard, and then the whole, even feeding animals that we have as companions, like dogs and cats and rabbits and birds and fishes, and people have as companions, but very often these animals are confined and their fed foods are not very good. And it's good if they're rescued, of course, but still, it's, it would be, I think, animals, letting animals have their sovereignty, that key word, sovereignty, is so important. And sovereignty is very, very important, I think, for us as human beings, that we have control over our own lives as individuals, and then when we have relationships with other sovereign human beings, right, each of us are respected, then our relationships are very deep. And when animals also are sovereign, then our relationships with them will be much more deep and profound and rewarding. But when we take away their sovereignty and make them dependent on us, then we lose everything. And we see that happening on every level today. I think, we see it happening in individuals. In many ways, we've lost our sovereignty. We're being spied upon, losing our privacy and so forth. And in many ways, in the larger governmental units, the same thing, losing sovereignty. And so to be able to have respect and self-determination and freedom within a context of cooperation and solidarity, that's really the awakening that is important to have. And it can happen. I think it can happen. But I think underlying it all is veganism. Without veganism, if we're eating animal foods, we're eating the opposite of all that. We're eating domination, exploitation, oppression, violence, and causing it, and it's disrespect and abuse. So thank you all for the work efforts you're making. So I'll just close. I want to just go through quickly some of these resources. I haven't had any questions, so if you have a question or comment, now's the time. We have a few minutes left, so we can do that. And I noticed that some of you have come on just recently, like you missed the first hour. Quite a few of you have come on just in the last half hour or 15 minutes for some reason. The whole first hour was me talking all about the China trip. And you can listen to it. This will be up on the internet as a recording. So if you want to listen to the adventures that I had in China and my sense of what we can learn, I think, from the Chinese people about veganism, and I think we can learn a lot. They cooperate so well together, and they have a sense of showmanship and getting the message out that I think is really amazing. And they have so much fun doing it. So all these events were really just tremendously lot of laughter and kids with their special outfits on. They made all these stuffed dolls, World Peace Diet dolls. They made World Peace Diet T-shirts, World Peace Diet bags, you know, for books, and I mean all these things that people are all using and wearing. I was signing, not only signing books, I was signing everybody's T-shirts. You know what I'm saying? And I'm telling you, it's such a delight to see people having fun and spreading the vegan message in a way that's really creative. I see it here in this country too, of course, but it's somehow seeing it the way they do it in China. In some ways, it's like they've taken it to another level because people are so connected with each other somehow. It's like a big family. It's a little hard to describe it in words. There's a little bit less individual separation and more, people are more embedded in relationships, social relationships. So, the vegan message is, I think once it, you know, catches on, it'll spread quickly. And that's what exactly what's happening. But anyway, so yeah, I talked about that, and then Ellen came on talking a little bit about our garden and food forest and organic, veganic recycling and composting and making, you know, sort of doing the best we can to complete the cycles in our own lives and with the earth. And then, yeah, we have just very briefly in the resources for June 2017, we have, if anyone wants to click on that first link that has a little taste of one of my talks there in music and China, and my essay on food waste is on IDA. And then there's just some news, basic different things. James Cameron seems to be doing great. He's got a vegan movie coming out, a documentary. I think that'll be great. I don't go through all this. There's a whole bunch of different things here. A lot of good news, a lot of positive things happening, a lot of bad things happening. You know, there's a lot of devastation to the environment and animals and all of that. But the good news is people are waking up to this more and more, and there's more movies. There's this new movie, Okja. It's a woman made by a Korean woman, animal rights film, which looks to me like it'll be very interesting. It was nice to see this Lion's Roar Buddhist magazine had an article written by a World Peace Diet facilitator, Dharma Voices for Animals fellow. We worked together setting up a lecture there in Detroit last year. And some articles on vaccines, which to me are terrible, and of course they're full of animal fluids and misery and violence and so forth. So just a whole bunch of different things. Dave Simon, a good friend who writes on the economics of animal agriculture, had an article in The Guardian, which is great to see. The article on the BBC, had what would happen if everyone went vegan, which, when things get into the mass media like this, it's usually watered down, but still, it's good to see that these questions being raised in the mass consciousness. And so that's that. And let's see. Oh, good. We have Marlene. I know Marlene has this wonderful Vegan Nation radio show. Marlene, hello.
Hi, Will. Hi, Madeline. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you all know that tomorrow on Vegan Nation Radio, which is WCUW.org, that's CU like Clark University, WCUW.org, everyone can listen, 12:30 to 1 Eastern Time, I'm featuring the International March to Close All Slaughterhouses. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, my gosh, that's great. Yeah, it's actually going to be a march to end to close slaughterhouses here in, I'm just looking up on my calendar right now. Yeah, on July 22nd in San Francisco, and I've been asked to speak for that. So I think there's local ones, too. Is that what we were talking about, something similar?
Oh, that's good to know. I'll run a second one for when you do your speech. I'll run that for a July show. But, yes, many of them were held June 10th and 11th this past weekend. And, of course, all over. Ireland, Germany, Japan, Tasmania, USA, Los Angeles had theirs.
Los Angeles had one, yeah.
Paris had 4,000 marches in Paris on June 10th.
Oh, really? Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so that's the show. So I combined everybody's as much as I, you know, I put them all together. And, of course, your music, too. So that's right. I thought that was very, very powerful, the international march to close off slaughterhouses. And many of the chants included vegan, the word vegan, which in the past, you know, the message was there, but not the word vegan, but vegan was included in many of the chants.
Right. Yeah, that's beautiful to hear. Yeah, that's the key. Great. Wow.
So I wanted to share.
Yeah, thanks. Do you know who's behind this? I think it's kind of, as I understand, at least the one in San Francisco, it's kind of a cooperative effort with several different groups, as I understand it. I'm not sure if that's the case, but that's the one in San Francisco anyway.
Yes, it's kind of all together. It's stopabattoirs.org is out of France, and Fermolabattoir.org. for the French, and they're the primary ones, and it's really Toronto March to Close Off Slaughterhouses with Jason King, who seems to be quite the organizer as well. So, yeah, they're all
great.
Connected.
Right, right. Well, great. So, yeah, I highly recommend everyone, and that'll be tomorrow at 12:30 Eastern Time on WCUW. It'll be live, and then I guess if people miss it for some reason, you have it archived usually, too, I believe.
Yeah.
All right, great. Well, thanks, Marlene. It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for the great work you're doing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care. Yeah, bye. Great. All right, well, I don't know if our good friend Lily Macy is on the call. She, I don't think she, I don't see her for some reason. But just to remind everyone that every Sunday now, again, there's, I think it's the, I can't remember, the 4th or the 5th, reading of the World Peace Diet that is done as a group on Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's open to anyone, and it's a great tool for advocacy and helping to, she says it creates vegan advocates, and so that's also a good thing to just recommend to people who maybe are new to veganism or to help them read the book. Sometimes it's hard to jump in and read the World Peace Diet because it seems a little daunting, so they can get some support on the call, which is great. So I'm wondering if that's everything. It's been about an hour and a half. I know it's getting very late on the East Coast. It's already 9:30. So, 10:30. Goodness gracious. All right, so I think I'm going to go ahead and thank all of you for joining us on the call this month. We have this coming Saturday, just so you're aware, we have the opening a fundraiser for a new animal sanctuary in Northern California that was started by Miyoko Shinner. Maybe you've heard of Miyoko's vegan cheeses, Miyoko's Creamery. She's got a new animal sanctuary in Marin County, Nicasio, and so on Saturday, Madeline and I will be going there, and I'll be speaking and playing. They have a grand piano at this animal sanctuary, if you can believe it. So, yeah, Miyoko has a lot of class, so I guess she has to have a grand piano at her sanctuary. And so I'll be playing for that. Jasmine Singer will also be there and speaking. And then, as Madeline said, on Wednesday, we leave on a whirlwind tour, speaking in Weaverville, California, up in Northern California on Wednesday, then Ashland on Thursday, Ashland again on Friday, Eugene on Saturday, Portland on Sunday, Beaverton on Monday, Roseburg on Tuesday, Redding on Wednesday, and Sacramento on Thursday, 29th. And I'll also be speaking, I'll probably be on Lily's call on July 2nd, if you're interested in that, and then doing a lecture, and all goes well, in Chicago in July on the 14th, and then we'll have our circle call on the 20th. of next month. So that's the upcoming month for us here. Wish you all a terrific month, a beautiful rest of the day and evening. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a labor of love, really, for all of us, and your support is always welcome. We don't ask, and I really don't charge for this at all, but if you'd like to make a donation to help fund this, you can go to World Peace Diet. Well, I guess it's World Peace Mastery, and then click on World Peace Diet Circle and make a donation. It would be helpful, but it's up to you. And Madeline and I send you all our love. Keep up the great work that you're doing. We love you and support you, and know that together we are helping to be part of, anyway, this awakening of human consciousness so that we can celebrate our lives on this beautiful earth the way we are intended to, in harmony with each other and with all living beings. So I'll just close with, let's see, what would be a nice piece? Yeah, maybe this is a very short piece. Let's see, maybe, how about, maybe the cow song. Cows are such soulful, beautiful animals who suffer so severely at our hands. Enjoy and much love to you all, and looking forward to doing together on the 20th of July. Feel free again to send me an email if you have any questions or concerns about anything relating to veganism and world peace and inner peace. Thanks again. Bye-bye.